we're going to see that we must never boast in our spiritual position at the expense of the Jewish people. Now, why not? Paul gives us three reasons we must never become arrogant as the redeemed people of God toward the Jews. Let's look at them together.
Welcome to The Word Unleashed with Tom Pennington. Tom is pastor teacher at Countryside Bible Church in Southlake, Texas. Hello again, I'm Bill Wright, and today we continue Tom's series titled, Israel's Future Salvation. What is the relationship between God, Gentiles, and the Jews as it relates to salvation? In Romans 11, the Apostle Paul uses the example of olive trees, and especially the grafting of olive trees, as a picture of the relationship between Jew and Gentile and God's relationship to them. Today on The Word Unleashed, Tom Pennington explains Paul's olive tree example to help us as Christians understand God's grand story of redemption and salvation. And here's a question I'd like you to consider as we listen. How does understanding God's heart for all people, both Jew and Gentile, change the way you pray for those who haven't yet received Christ? Let's join Tom Pennington for today's study here on The Word Unleashed.
In the March 2015 issue of the scientific journal Current Biology, there was an article on plant grafting. Not likely one you've read, not likely to have a whole lot of likes attached to it on the internet, but it is an important article, and this is what the article says. Since ancient times, people have cut and joined together plants of different varieties or species so that they would grow as a single plant, a process known as grafting. References to grafting appear in the Bible, ancient Greek, and ancient Chinese texts, indicating that grafting was practiced in Europe, the Middle East, and Asia by at least the 5th century B.C. And then the article says this, and you may not be aware of this, but today, plant grafting is widely used in orchards, greenhouses, vineyards, and in gardens. Paul uses this ancient practice of plant grafting in Romans chapter 11 to make a powerful spiritual point. But what he describes here is not the normal kind of plant grafting that would take place. Normally, branches from a cultivated olive tree that actually bear good fruit would have been grafted into a wild olive tree's stock. That stock being hardy and hard to kill, but with a graft in it that would then bear good fruit. But Paul describes exactly the reverse, and because of that, it's interesting to read how the liberals who don't believe the Bible love to pile on and try to find some occasion to attack the Bible. And in this case, in this section we're going to study today, there are those who have said that Paul was ignorant of normal farming practices, just simply uninformed. He got it all wrong. In fact, one author says that he was simply an uninformed city boy who lacked the curiosity to inquire what happened in the olive yards that were by every road he walked. In other words, this author says, you know, Paul was basically stupid. Such a condescending point of view and so ridiculous. I promise you this, Paul was far more brilliant at a human level than the one who has criticized him. He knows what he's doing here. In fact, Paul intentionally changes what was typically done to make a profound spiritual point. Grafting a wild branch into a cultivated tree was not done, but God in grace has done exactly that. And grafting a branch that you had cut off from the tree because it didn't bear fruit back into that tree again, that was never done. But God is able to do it. And Paul is going to argue that, in fact, that is what he will do. In Romans 11, Paul is explaining God's continuing faithfulness to the Jewish people. And he develops that concept of God's faithfulness, as we've seen, in two basic sections. In verses 1 through 10, we've seen Israel's current spiritual condition. And then in verses 11 through 32, he shares with us Israel's future spiritual salvation. We've already looked at the first way he develops that idea of her future salvation. In verses 11 through 16, we've seen the certainty of her future salvation. It's going to happen. She is going to be restored. She is going to be redeemed. She is going, in the words of verse 16, to be accepted and to experience life from the dead. But today we come to the second way that Paul develops this idea of Israel's future spiritual salvation. And I've called it this, a warning in light of her future salvation. A warning in light of her future salvation. That's the message of chapter 11, verses 17 through 24. Let's read it together. You follow along in your copy of the Scriptures or the Bible that's there in the seat in front of you. Chapter 11, verse 17. But if some of the branches were broken off, and you, being a wild olive, were grafted in among them and became partaker with them of the rich root of the olive tree, do not be arrogant toward the branches. But if you are arrogant, remember that it is not you who supports the root, but the root supports you. You will say then, branches were broken off so that I might be grafted in. Quite right, they were broken off for their unbelief. But you stand by your faith. Do not be conceited, but fear. For if God did not spare the natural branches, he will not spare you either. Behold then the kindness and severity of God. To those who fell, severity. But to you, God's kindness, if you continue in his kindness. Otherwise, you also will be cut off. And they also, if they do not continue in their unbelief, will be grafted in, for God is able to graft them in again. For if you were cut off from what is by nature a wild olive tree and were grafted contrary to nature into a cultivated olive tree, how much more will these who are the natural branches be grafted into their own olive tree? Now that is a fascinating passage, and my suspicion is that most of you have never heard a sermon on that passage. But it is crucial for us to understand. Now let me begin to make a couple of observations. First of all, there is something that is clear in the Greek text that is not immediately obvious in the English text. Throughout this paragraph, Paul uses the second person singular. In English, when we talk about you, second person, that can be singular, meaning you as an individual, or it can mean plural, you as a group, right? There aren't two different words in English for you. But Paul, throughout this passage, both in the pronouns he uses and in the verbs he uses the second person singular. Why is that important? It means that he is addressing this paragraph not to us collectively as Gentiles, most of us here are Gentiles, but rather to each of us individually, who are primarily Gentile by birth. If you are primarily Gentile, Paul wrote this paragraph, and ultimately the Holy Spirit wrote this paragraph, directed to you personally and individually. There's something very important for you to understand. Now, also, and this is clear in this text, Paul uses an extended metaphor about an olive tree. Now, I think you understand that the olive tree is common throughout the Mediterranean world, including Israel. The olive tree typically grows to about 20 feet high. Its branches are covered year-round with long, thin leaves that are green on the top side and silvery on the bottom. The olive produces clusters of white flowers, the buds really of the olives, and about 5 to 6 months after the flowers, the olives are ripe and ready for harvest. The olive tree is amazingly resilient. In fact, there are some throughout the Mediterranean, including in Israel, that are estimated to be more than 1,000 years old. In biblical times, the olive tree was not prized for its fruit. You didn't go to lunch at the typical diner down the street and along with your sandwich have a number of olives to eat. They simply weren't eaten. That's because the fruit of the olive tree is incredibly bitter. If you were to go to an olive tree and pick an olive off of it and try to eat it, you would immediately spit it out. It is incredibly bitter. It has to be very heavily processed in order to be enjoyed. The idea of pickling or salting olives didn't become popular until the Romans, when they found a way to shortcut the process. And it was only then, in the time of the Romans, that olives first began to be added to dinner tables. But even today, olives are not used mostly for food. Only 10% of the olives that are harvested today make it to somebody's table. 90% of them are harvested for their oil. And in ancient times, it was the same way. In ancient times, olive trees were valuable primarily not because you got some food from them, but rather for two resources that you got from an olive tree. First of all, its wood. Its wood was highly prized. And in 1 Kings 6, we're told that this hard, beautifully grained wood was used in Solomon's temple to decorate it, make it a magnificent place. But primarily, olive trees were used for oil. Olive oil was crucial to the economy of ancient Israel and to their daily life. The Hebrew word for oil, meaning olive oil, occurs over 150 times in the Old Testament. How was it used? Well, see if you use it this way. Olive oil in the ancient world was used primarily in these ways. First of all, as fuel for lighting. Your little oil lamp was fueled by olive oil. Secondly, it was used, as many of us do, for cooking. Then it was used for medicinal purposes. And finally, it was used for moisturizing the skin, which perhaps some of the moisturizers you put on this morning had olive oil as a base or had them somehow as part of the ingredient. So that's what Paul is referring to here. Now, in verses 17 to 24, Paul uses olive trees, and especially the grafting of olive trees, as an illustration of the relationship between Jews and Gentiles, and God's relationship to both. Now, there are a couple of keys that are important for you to understand this paragraph. Let me give you these keys that sort of unlock this passage. Key number one, the first key, is you need to understand the groups that are represented in this metaphor of the olive tree. And these groups, by the way, I'm going to give them to you up front, but they're going to become obvious as we work our way through the passage. Okay, here are the groups. Number one, you have the olive tree itself, which represents the believing people of God. That's the olive tree. Secondly, you have the root of the tree. It represents, as we discover in verse 16, the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the promises that God made to them. Thirdly, you have the original branches on this olive tree that remain on the tree, that are still there. They haven't been cut off. Those are the physical descendants of Abraham who believe, who are true believers. Then you have the original branches that were on this olive tree that were broken off. They are the physical descendants of Abraham who did not believe. And then finally, you have the wild olive branches that are grafted in, and they are us, for the most part, Gentile believers. So those are the groups in this metaphor, and we'll see that as it unfolds. There's a second key, however, to understanding this section, and that is understanding the main command which this paragraph makes. Look at verse 18. Here's the point. Do not be arrogant toward the branches. It's repeated in a different way in verse 20. Notice the second half of verse 20. Do not be conceited, but fear. You see, this paragraph is in essence a warning directed at each one of us of Gentile descent. Don't be arrogant toward the branches. Now, what is this word arrogant? Well, the Greek word simply means to boast at the expense of another. It means to revel in your defeat of or triumph over someone else. In fact, it's used in secular Greek of a gladiator who is boasting over his defeated enemy. That's the concept here. So this entire paragraph is a warning directed at each one of us of Gentile descent. Do not be arrogant toward the branches. If I could reduce its message to one short expression, it would be this. As Gentiles, we must never become arrogant toward the Jews because of our new place in God's plan of redemption. We must never become arrogant toward the Jews because of our new place in God's plan of redemption. We must never boast in our spiritual position at the expense of the Jewish people. Now, why not? Well, in verses 17 to 24, we're going to see that Paul gives us three reasons we must never become arrogant as the redeemed people of God toward the Jews. Let's look at them together. Three reasons. Number one, remember your real relationship to the people of God. This is the message of verses 17 and 18. And he's going to show us that real relationship in several ways. Let's kind of break this down a little bit. What is our real relationship? Well, the first thing we need to understand about our real relationship to the true people of God is you, Gentile Christian, were not part of the tree. You were not part of the tree. Look at verse 17. You being a wild olive. There are two kinds of olive trees in this paragraph and in this metaphor that Paul is using. You see them clearly in verse 24. There you find a wild olive tree. That's, we're told, what by nature we belong to, Gentiles. And then there is a cultivated olive tree. That's the Jewish people, and particularly the true people of God within Israel, the branches that were left. So those are the two. Now, why does this matter? Well, if you don't know anything about olive trees, you may not understand this, but wild olive trees grow from dispersed seeds, either blown by the wind or carried by birds, and those seeds are spread and wild olive trees sprout up. On the other hand, cultivated olives are planted, and typically cultivated olive trees are planted using shoots that have grown up at the base of another cultivated tree. Why does it matter? Because, and this is sort of a shocking thing to learn, but wild olive trees are notoriously bad at, guess what? Producing olives. You want to say, look, you only had one job. But they are. They're notoriously bad at it. For an olive tree to be productive, it had to be cultivated. And Paul says in verse 17, you, meaning the Gentile believer, you were a wild olive, or in the words of verse 24, you belonged by nature to a wild olive tree. That is, you were completely unproductive. You encouraged yet? This is what Paul wants you to know. Spiritually, you were completely without fruit, and you weren't part of the tree, which is the people of God. You were completely disconnected from the people of God. You didn't belong. You didn't belong to God's people. You were completely unattached to the patriarchs and the promises that were made to them. Let me show you what it meant to be born into the tree that represented the true people of God. If you were Jewish, chapter 9, verse 4, the Israelites, okay, the Jewish people, notice their position here. To them belongs the adoption as sons. That is, God adopted them as a nation, as a whole, as his people. Doesn't mean the salvation of every individual Jewish person, but as a whole, they were adopted. And the glory, that is, they got to see the Shekinah glory of God at the temple. And the covenants, all of the covenants were made with the descendants of Abraham, and we get in on them. And the giving of the law, they're the ones who receive God's law. And the temple service and all of the promises, theirs also was the fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And from them is the Messiah according to the flesh, who is over all, God blessed forever. That was their position. You want to know what your position was? It's the same as mine. Go over to Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 11. Paul says, let me tell you what it's like to be born Gentile. Ephesians 2, verse 11, therefore remember that formerly, that is before you came to Christ, you, the Gentiles in the flesh, who were called uncircumcision by the so-called circumcision, which is performed in the flesh by human hands, verse 12, remember that you were at that time, before your salvation, now notice this, separate from the Messiah. You were excluded from the commonwealth of Israel. You were a stranger to the covenants of promise. And because you didn't have any of the promises, you had no hope. And you were without God in the world. That was our position. But thank God for verse 13. But now, in Christ Jesus, you who formerly were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. You see the point Paul is making? He's saying, listen, back in chapter 11 of Romans, you weren't part of the tree. Do you get this? You didn't belong to the tree. But he doesn't leave it there. He also makes a second point as he explains our real relationship to the true people of God. It's that you were sovereignly grafted in and became a partaker of the root. This is the message of verse 17 and beginning of verse 18. Look at verse 17. But if some of the branches were broken off, and you being a wild olive were grafted in among them, and became partaker with them of the rich root of the olive tree. Now you'll immediately notice that verse 17 in its entirety is an if statement. The then statement is the first part of verse 18. Then don't be arrogant toward the branches. But there are two parts to the condition in verse 17. First part is this: if some of the branches were broken off. This refers to the physical descendants of Abraham who belonged to the chosen people of God as a whole, who enjoyed the blessings that came with that. We just saw them in chapter 9. But they have now been broken off or cut off. It's passive, but this is what's called a divine passive, meaning God did it. God cut them off. God broke them off from those blessings. Why? Why did God cut them off from these blessings? Verse 20, because of their own unbelief. They were broken off because of their unbelief. And so this is what happened. That condition's been met. It's already happened. Now, the second condition in verse 17 is if you, being a wild olive, were grafted in among them and became partaker with them of the rich root of the olive tree. Now, grafted in here is a very technical, arborist term. I'm going to show you a couple of slides, and there are pictures of, if you look at the right side, you'll see limbs that have been grafted in, old grafts, into existing ancient olive trees and how it's grown through the years. You can see the difference. That's the idea here. You've been grafted in. We were wild olive branches. That is, we were unproductive, we bore no fruit, and we weren't part of the true people of God. But God in His grace has grafted us in. He gave us true faith, and He graciously made us part of the true people of God. Notice the expression, among them, in verse 17. That means among the branches that remained on the tree. In other words, among the believing descendants of Abraham. We have been grafted in among them. And as a result, verse 17 says, we have become partakers. The word means participants or partners with them. That is, with the true Jewish believers of both the Old Testament and the New Testament, of the rich root of the olive tree. Listen, if you're a Christian, both of the conditions of verse 17 have been met. Some Jewish branches have been cut off, and you have been grafted in. Therefore, verse 18, do not be arrogant toward the branches. I think he means don't be arrogant toward the branches that have been broken off, the Jewish unbelievers, and don't be arrogant toward the branches that remain, the Jewish Christians. Now, why would we be tempted to arrogance toward the Jewish people? I don't believe the issue here is primarily anti-Semitism, although that's certainly involved, and we talked about that even last week. That's unacceptable for a Christian. I think he's talking about misunderstanding how the Jewish people are now connected to the purpose of God. Here's how Douglas Moo puts it in his commentary, and I think he's exactly right. He says, these Gentile believers were apparently convinced that they belonged to a new people of God that had simply replaced Israel. Those Jews who believed, they apparently assumed, if some of them came to faith, they could become part of their community and on their terms. It's like, look, if they want to come now, there's this new thing God has done entirely separate from the Jews. He's done with them. He's rejected them. We're now the new deal in town. And if they want to come, fine. They come on our terms and our conditions. That's the temptation. And Paul says, don't you dare for a moment be tempted in that direction, because you weren't part of the tree and God sovereignly grafted you in so that you became a partaker of the root.
That's Tom Pennington here on The Word Unleashed with part 5 of his series, Israel's Future Salvation. Tom will bring you part 6 next time, and we invite you to join us then. In a world filled with great uncertainty, God's Word and the promises it contains offer wonderful encouragement to believers in Jesus Christ. We pray that the ministry of The Word Unleashed is playing a prominent role to that effect, and we'd love to hear how that works in your life and personal walk with the Lord. And remember to connect with us on social at The Word Unleashed. The Word Unleashed is made possible because of the prayers and financial gifts of individuals like you. Please consider partnering with us. You can find out how to do so by visiting us online at The Word Unleashed. And now for Tom Pennington and the entire team, I'm Bill Wright. Thanks for listening to The Word Unleashed, exalting God's glory, explaining God's truth.